Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 287, my conversation with Turtle Dove Films founders Elena Weinberg and Duncan Coe. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. Mention code YBY20 and you'll get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. We can help you. PodcastCadet.com. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is my resource for vegan-friendly whole plant extract CBD oil. Check out TrueHempScience.com to see all the CBD products available to you now. Use code YESBUTY7 to get 7% off your order of $50 or more. Plus, you'll get a free packet of CBD edibles with your order. TrueHempScience.com. This week on Yes But Why podcast, I reconnected with writer-director Elena Weinberg, who, you may remember, I spoke to in episode 182 during the 26th annual Austin Film Festival. This time, I also had the amazing opportunity of speaking with writer-director Duncan Coe, who also happens to be Elena's husband and creative partner. Listen in as we all talk about making content, writing screenplays, and producing a lot of films together. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 287, Elena Weinberg and Duncan Coe on being quirky, confident, and creative. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah. You guys are funny. I am so happy to talk to you guys. So thank you guys again for, you know, being with me and joining me again on the podcast. It's the first opportunity I've ever had to talk to somebody for a second time. So thank you so much, Elena, for doing this for me again.
I love being the first second.
Yeah. We get to revisit and like figure out like what new adventures you've had. And I'm like so psyched about that to be able to, you know, see what's going on and, you know, how things have changed, especially in the world of film for you and for the, you know, world around you. What are you seeing? And also, Duncan, thank you for joining us this time. It's really nice to have you with us for this chat. I'm pleased to be able to, you know, pick your brain about your experiences.
Of course. Yeah.
What's funny about you guys is when I first moved to town in Austin, I heard of you both. Like, so your names were in the ether as like people who were making web series, people who were acting, who were doing things in town of like, oh, they're really getting work done. So pretty much my entire sort of Austin theater and improv career, I've held you guys at high regard because all the people that I met were always talking about how great you were and what fun work that you guys were doing and how fun you guys were. So I've never known a day when it wasn't like Duncan and Elena are the most fun. You should totally work with them if you ever get a chance.
I mean, my ego loves that.
Thanks for fluffing us up.
Good. No, I mean, but I want you to know, like to a certain extent, like I remember when I sat down with Elena, I was all like, oh my God, okay. All right, we're going to do this. And like, I was glad that the first time during AFF that we were in the fancy room, because I was all like, this is a fancy talk for a fancy lady.
But
because, you know, I had been able to see the movie that you guys had made during that particular festival when we first met. And And then, you know, Duncan was in it. So it was like, but so you guys are cool. I know that I'm like still fluffing your egos, but I just, you know, your work has been recognized certainly by the Austin community and then very much from the film, the Austin film community for sure. Now you guys are in LA. Tell me for what's going on with you. What's the community that you guys are in right now in LA? Tell me about your team and the way that you connected with people when you got there.
It's been a really kind of disjointed and interesting transition, actually, because we moved here in July of 2019. We moved here because Duncan got an editing job here and I could like freelance out here and stuff. So we moved on over. But I still had my hands and still do have my hands in the Austin community, like pretty heavily. So for the first 6 months we were here, Duncan was like settling into his new full-time job as an editor. And I was going back and forth between Austin and LA working. And then the pandemic happened. So
I think the first 6 months we were here, Elena was in Austin for 3 months. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. So then it was like, I hope you're ready to be living in LA because now you're really living there and you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. So it's been interesting. I actually got a full-time job with the same company that Duncan works for as a producer. So, my motto is fix it in post and his is fix it in pre, and we work at the same desk.
I like it. So like he does something, you change it, and now it's perfect. I get it. I understand. Yeah. I am also married. So, you know, I understand how that goes. No, but that's so awesome. First of all, like, kudos to you guys for being involved in this production company and like finding a solid base, right? The world got a little insane for a while. And I am so happy to hear that you guys were sort of, you had found a home and like a production company that was sort of helpful and there for you and enough to be like, oh, okay, we have jobs, so it's not the worst. And also to get you connected in a nice way. So I'm sure you met new people when you got involved with that production company. What's the name of the company that you work for, if you don't mind mentioning?
Yeah, so we work for Gooder. It's actually an activewear sunglasses brand that has like basically our content department is a production company inside of the retail company. So our little 8-person team makes all of the content for the brand. And we get a shitload of free sunglasses. So.
Ah, yes. The sun will never bother your eyes again.
It's sunnier in California.
So. Absolutely. You wear 3 at a time. Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
But yeah, no, that is something that when I don't know how you feel about this, Duncan. I mean, maybe I do, but I'll pretend that I don't for the sake of this conversation.
Say what you're going to say first.
I always
hate this one guy. Yeah,
I really resisted like a full-time salary 9-to-5 sort of lifestyle before this. I like purposely always freelanced because I wanted to be in control of my own schedule. And then I realized I was taking every job as a freelancer just to like make it. And I wasn't really spending any time doing my own passion project work because I was so burnt out on freelancing that when I did decide to go for a full-time job that I very miraculously got in February of 2020, right before everything shut down, like literally the last week of February, I realized that I had been working way more than 40 hours a week as a freelancer. So like taking a full-time position lightened my daytime load so that I now feel a lot more, I feel a lot more open to working on projects, like indie projects with other people. And like, I feel secure in my financials now, so I can like volunteer for my friends and like really make micro budget productions without being like, oh, like I really need you to pay me. And like, I don't advocate for non-paid work unless it's like in a position where you're like helping friends and like you want to do it. Obviously like paying artists is something that I believe in, but yeah, it's interesting for me that taking a full-time producing position has actually opened me up to feeling more creative outside of that single job.
Yeah. I think that that's a really important thing to that you reflected on and were able to make that good decision for yourself, because I think a lot of people are similar to your vibe in that they're like, no, I want to control my own schedule. I want to work for myself. Damn the man. I say that all the time. I have a hard time with it, right? It's a tough thing. There's some of us that are like, yeah, cool. Sign me up. I'll work for a corporation. And some of us who are like, yeah, I'd rather scrape it together because that is not what I'm looking for. But I think you make an excellent point, which is that like, at a certain point, you have in your freelance work, you learned about as many lessons as you could or should learn on your own. You now know how to do it. You can do it. You can like log that in your skill set. You're like, yes, can cobble together a life on my own, can create things from nothing just with my own skills. But to be able to work for somebody else and to provide yourself a certain level of comfort so then you can start working on projects that are like dear to your heart, but you wouldn't have had the like mental capacity or the financial capacity to get it done previous. Nothing wrong with that. And I think that that's a really important thing that people need to hear, you know, especially these days. There's a big, there half of the world is like, artists don't matter. And then the other half are like, I'm an artist. And if I don't do full-time acting work, then I'm worthless, right? Yeah. Neither of these things are true, right? You have to figure out how to balance in this insane world. We live in a clearly capitalist society. Like, you need money. So there should be no shame ever in I need to work a job. Now, the fact that you were able to get it in film producing and like creating content and like working with a cool company, like, boom, yeah, like, was, yes, awesome.
That was sort of an anomaly. I was looking, you know, after we finished the movie or while we were finishing the movie, I was doing all the editing for about 8 months or so. Would you say we're living at my mom's house, mm-hmm. and like I was looking for full-time work in Austin and Los Angeles, and whichever bit, that's where we were going to go. And I wasn't getting a phone call to save my life in Austin. You know, I could hustle for like the day player job or whatever on a gig, but I was getting phone calls for jobs in Los Angeles for editing jobs, because that's what I had just spent a year doing, editing our movie. Yeah. I was like, I know how to do this now.
Yeah, you do.
And I ended up landing this job, and I was sort of frustrated. I was sending out 10, 15, 20 resumes, cover letters a week and getting nothing and nothing and nothing. And then this one came through. I got on Indeed, and it was, the job posting was a little ridiculous. It was sort of like irreverent and belligerent. And it was like one of the requirements for working in this company is when you send an application, you have to draw a picture of an octopus fighting a pirate. And that's just a filter for them to get rid of people who don't take themselves, or that take themselves too seriously. And I was like, you know what?
Or can't follow directions.
Or can't follow directions. Yeah. You know, it's a real, real easy just to like eliminate a whole bunch of people from your talent pool if they're too cool to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not too cool to do that. I'll whip it up. And then I'd scrap my whole resume, whole cover letter. I was like, here's why you shouldn't hire me. And I listed it out. I was like, look, I do creative shit on the side. So there's going to be times where I'm taking off to do film production stuff. I like to travel. I'm going to take vacations. That's just one thing I'm going to do. But I'm also super qualified for this job and I can get the work done. Also, your company is a dog company. I have three cats. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sacrifice my cats to come work for you. And they were like, phone call. Let's get them in the door.
They're like, three cats is on the phone. Come on. Let's all get in the conference call, everyone. And so yeah, tell us about your cats.
I had to stop taking myself so seriously in my applications. Like, yeah, this is why I'm the perfect applicant and you should hire me because look at my accolades. It's like, no, here's why you should hire me, because I'm a human being and I can do the work.
Yeah. Dude, I'm going to tell you that, like, you know, cover letters like that, like when you apply for a job and you can like distinguish yourself in that way, when you like show people how like different you are, and also how brave you can be. Confidence has won me everything in my life. If I walk in confidently, I get everything. I was a temp for years, and people would always think that I was just an employee. Like, no one ever knew I was a temp because I just walk in and I'm like, what does this company do? Great, I got it. Like, and that was it. You know, I was there for 2 days sometimes, and people would be like, what? You haven't worked here for 6 years? And I was like, no, I just read the brochure. Like,
they're coming up to you asking for signatures on paperwork.
You're like,
we need someone
it.
To sign this. Like,
I got this. No problem.
Got it. Yeah. Yep. Approved.
Just stamping things. Yeah. Like the whole company's different after I leave after 2 days. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
This is kind of a lesson that I taught myself / learned in college. I had a writing partner when I was at St. Ed's, and we had written two one-act shows that were performed together in tandem, just sort of thematically similar, that we played Austin Fringe Festival with. And we wanted to apply to New York Fringe, and we were sitting down like thinking, how do we put this cover letter together that makes them like really want to accept our tiny little play from Austin, Texas in a New York film, New York Fringe Fest. And we just sort of threw caution to the wind and was like, hey guys, we're really badass, and this is why you should accept us, because of A, B, and C. And if you don't accept us, that's kind of on you. And they did, and they saw that we had a swagger, and we had a tone that we were going for that met our play, you know, and it worked, and boom, just like that, we got New York Fringe on our resumes.
Yeah, yeah, confidence wins you everything. It's crazy. I mean, it's like you walk in there, and that's the other thing. Like, one of the things I did as a temp for one of the companies was read all the cover letters of new. They were like, we're going to hire somebody to do this job. I know you've never worked here before, but can you read all these cover letters and pick the ones that we should actually consider? And I was like, I don't even know what you do. And they're like, that's not the point. They're like, just figure it out. And so the best part about that festival is it's probably like an intern who, like me, was reading things, and all of a sudden they were like, what? And they were like, hey, somebody, you got to read this. Like, because I got a guy to interview for the job, and he was not qualified even remotely. But his cover letter was so crazy and insane, but like fun and exciting. He runs a PR company now, which is hilarious. But he wrote this thing. I went straight to the hiring manager and was like, read this. This is the letter. We need to get this guy in. I don't even care if you don't hire him. We need to meet him. And she was like, okay. But that's the key. That's the key to getting different things like that. And the other beautiful thing is you get to the point, you get to a certain age, you get to a certain point in your career. You guys have been making movies, theater, you've been creating for a long time. You get to the point where you know that you have worth, that you're like, no, I'm legit. Like for instance, I know that I was buttering your bread earlier, but I'm going to do it some more. I didn't even know what a web series was until I heard of A-Town. Like, it wasn't a thing in my radar of creative options until I heard about it. And then I was like, oh, wait, you can make like a TV show for the internet? And it blew my mind, right? So you've been on the cusp of brand new ideas of like the first time that somebody does something. You've been creating and building these things. Heck, just the information that you sent me about what you're working on right now. Oh my God, you like 4,000 projects. Like, it's amazing. Because you guys are constantly working. It's part of you. And so the idea that you can have confidence, that you can walk up to someone and say, hey, take it or leave it. We're great. If you'd like it, you're welcome to put our film in your lineup. But if you don't, hey, that's your problem, right?
Well, and what's so funny about A-Town is that when we were making A-Town, like, I did not consider myself a writer at all. And I was like, just making this, I was just like writing these short scripts with my creative partner at the time, Mallory, because Duncan is the quote unquote writer of the two of us. And he was writing his Oscar winning feature film or whatever that like we were going to take ourselves very seriously making. But like, because he was like in his writing phase, I was like, let's just like make something for fun. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, let's just like do it. And like, almost, I feel like because we didn't really take ourselves seriously and just like did something fun and like figured something out in what was like, I mean, I guess like the web series world is still kind of the Wild West of filmmaking because there aren't like super structured rules the way that like a feature should be structured or something like that. But at the time, even more so because it was a brand new kind of medium, there were no rules. So like I was not scared to write it at all because I was like, who cares how this is structured because it doesn't matter. And we just like made it and it was super fun. And we ended up making 2 full seasons out of it before we made Duncan's.
Oscar winning feature
Method
film.
Method Fest winning feature film.
Yeah. I mean, but the beauty of the two of you guys is that you're like at the same desk doing different things. And yet there's constant amazing creativity coming out of both of you. Like, and the fact that you're like, I didn't consider myself a writer is like, oh my God, guys, guys, like, I wish you could understand how, like what I think in my mind about Elena, and number one is writer. Like, it's like when I think of people who are like writing films, who are like getting it done, it's you guys. You know what I mean? Like, I know people that are doing it in Hollywood that don't make as much as you guys do. Like, you're just churning it out. You just like have this amazing creative font that's like welling it up and just like giving us all this wonderful content to have.
I think
dear audience, clearly I'm fans of these two.
I think the reminder for me on that note, the I don't consider myself a writer thing, is I think it's the very first chapter, or maybe even the introduction to Rodriguez's book, Rebel Without a Crew. I think the first thing he says is, hey, call yourself a director. There, you're a director. Now let's talk about making movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with writing. If you write, you're a writer. You don't have to get staff. You don't have to sell a script. You don't have to do anything. If you're writing, you're a writer. Call yourself a writer and sell yourself as a writer.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. He's a great person to have as a goal, you know, yeah, for sure. If only just because bro does all of the parts, like bro does everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I recently heard an interview with Salma Hayek about how when they made Desperado, she was uncomfortable doing the sex scene. So he said, don't worry, I'll get rid of all of the crew and I will film the entire thing by myself. And it was like, what? Yeah. Bro can just do that? But
if that's what makes her comfortable, great.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, he set himself up for that. He built his own style of filmmaking doing it himself.
Right. So. But that's the other beautiful thing about y'all's path as well. You've been creating different content. Like I said, in my mind, you invented the web series. I'm sure there were others, but that yours was the first one that I saw. And I was like, wait, this is a thing? Let's do it. And then I was like, oh, the internet. No, just kidding.
What is the World Wide Web?
I don't understand you guys. No. I was 30 when I moved to Austin. I was aware of technology, but, you know, creating... my personal path was in theater all the way. Austin was my first foray into film. So I learned about film from people like y'all who were like doing it in Austin. Austin, a great film town for fostering, you know, the confidence of people to create stuff, right? Yeah. Maybe not exactly where Hollywood's picking it up all the time, but no. If you look at the breadth of independent films being made in this area, it's amazing, and there's a ton, right?
Yeah, and it goes
so
back
that's great.
It goes back to like the late 80s when Linklater was making Slacker, you know? Nobody had made a movie like that before, and he was blowing people's minds because he could do whatever he wanted because he wasn't constrained by Hollywood's restrictions. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to make this sort of anthology movie that goes scene from scene, and no characters are like, there's no through line, there's no structure, but you're watching it and you're like, but there is a story here and there's something going on. And he inspires Clerks to be made, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we would never have those movies if Linklater wasn't sitting there going, you know what? I'm just going to do what I want to do.
But that's the key, too. And something that I appreciate about y'all's work is that there is a confidence in that, like, yeah, maybe somebody isn't making this film, but it needs to be made. The story is nagging at my brain, I'm going to create it. I mean, you guys are clearly clairvoyant, having made Room Full of Nothing directly before the whole world emptied. But
that was kismet.
That was insane. Like, yeah. I was like, What's crazy too is I was so glad it came out before. I was so happy that it had made its way in front of people and that we had watched it and talked about it and been part of that experience before the pandemic. Because now, like, I have a girlfriend who's a writer who apparently wrote a whole novel about a person going through the pandemic. And her publisher is like, no, no. We don't want
this. It's oversaturated.
No one wants to hear about it. Yeah. I was like, don't worry. Wait. I go, wait 5 years and we'll all be like, oh my God, you remember? Yeah. Let's read about it. So I was like, just put it on the shelf. They'll buy it in a few years. Yeah. But it was such a smart thing.
I wrote a tweet a couple of months ago that was basically like, it was, I don't know that it was a mean tweet, but some people took it as a mean tweet. So I deleted it. But it was basically like, hey, filmmakers, if you're thinking about making a like Zoom style pandemic short film right now, don't. And like a bunch of people were like, hell yeah. Like, I don't want to see that right now. But then there were some people that were like,
make what you want to make. Don't listen to this bitch.
Which is like, fine. Like, yes, everyone should like, however you can be creative right now, you should be. But one of the people who replied to me, which like this part of it has stuck with me, was like, hell yeah. Like, were we ready to see September 11th films on September 12th? No.
No.
Like, we don't want to see COVID-19 films right now. Like, we may want to in the future when we're not still in the fucking middle of it. Can I curse?
Yeah.
In the fucking middle of it. But like, the thing is it's still happening. And like, of course, there will be important stories about it. And like, there are, everyone's experiences are different, but like, it feels too soon right now. And like, I'm not enjoying watching people like make jokes about interns not being able to get each other coffee because they're at home on a Zoom screen and not in the office. Like, it's just not like,
I
don't know.
No, I completely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, if the pandemic was like 6 months and then it was over and we were all like, oh my God, woo, we made it through that. We are like ready to live regular life again. Then I think maybe, and like I said, I go, hey, just put that on the shelf. That, I mean, if it's a story about a person who went through something, 10 years from now, they're going to be dying for that stuff. Right. Yeah, I was like, I watched, like, for instance, I watched Inside by Bo Burnham. I watched it. I cried all the way through it. And then I said, great, I'm going to watch that again in 10 years.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I want it to go into the Library of Congress as a record of history, for sure. But do I want to be part of it right now? No. Love him so hard. Hope he's doing well. Hope somebody sent him some depression meds because he's a sweet boy who did a great job. But you're right. The art that is inspired by this right now, it has a time and a place, but it's just not immediate. And that's weird. That's weird for us because we've been living in an immediate world for a long time. For maybe the last 5 or 6 years, things like, posting things live, putting things up on Instagram stories, stuff happening right now, people want to talk about it right now. But what they don't realize, because not everybody is artists and have the distance that you understand as a writer, as a creator, as a like, this is what the world storytelling is about, is you need some distance. You need some time to process personally and then go back. Like, what was it? It was you mentioned 9/11. It was just the 20th anniversary of that, which blew my freaking mind. I couldn't even watch a single film. And then when it came up, I was like, oh, you know what? Hey, let's watch that. Let's watch that Nicolas Cage one about 9/11. Let's do it. I was ready. 20 years later, I was ready.
I think when, what was it? Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, whichever one that one was. I think it was called something like that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
When that came out, I was like, This is too soon. Like 10 years later.
Yeah. You're like, hey, wow. Absolutely not. Yeah, no. In fact, the movie that I watched came out like 4 years after. I was like, guys. And listen, I understand from the point of view of artists being inspired. Yes, be inspired. But not everything that you write has to come out as soon as you finish writing it. Right?
Yeah, I think there's also like a shelf life for like immediate content. Like there were maybe 2 or 3 weeks at the very beginning of the pandemic that like, I'm sure like micro shorts were coming out or like people were tweeting like very specific things about like this new pandemic life and like making light of it and stuff like that, that were funny then. But then it's like, it's been 2 years. We've got to not, it's not like a funny new lighthearted thing anymore. We're in the trenches. Yeah. Maybe never getting out. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not at war in the trenches being like, bombs are funny, am I right? Like, right. No, right. They're about to hit us. Like, it's happening right now. Stop making jokes, right? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But there's something to understanding art and creating and knowing an audience, which I think you guys have a great connection to that. Even the clairvoyance of creating a room full of nothing. like I was like, that's how attuned they are to the storytelling of the world. They told us the story before it even happened. Like, yeah, that's indeed. How you guys are like, you want to know how amazing I am? Here, watch this. I made it 2 years before the pandemic. They're going to be like, what?
Did I write that summer of 2017 and then we shot it January, February 2018?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the other part about movies that people never understand is I'm like, you know, they'll watch a movie that came out now and they're like, did they make this during COVID? And I was like, no, movies that you're seeing right absolutely now not. Were made 3 years ago. Yeah. Like, no, absolutely not. The only thing that you've seen that's like on TV that was made post-pandemic was like a little bit of The Walking Dead. Like, and yeah, now there's shows coming out. Like, all of the morning show second season was done in the middle of the pandemic, sure. But at the same time, like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, most movies are like, bro, that's like a 4-year process. You cannot do that.
Yeah.
So for you guys, since you're, you know, always creating new stuff, you've got great ideas, you're working, your creative brains are always bubbling up. How are you guys creating now? Like, as we mentioned, you know, you guys sent me the list of all the things you're working on. You've got like 47 projects. How are you coming up with these new ideas? What is inspiring you? How do the two of you keep coming up with new ideas and new creations?
I mean, for me personally, I'm pretty fortunate that I love producing along with creating. And so a lot of the smaller short film projects I'm attached to right now is stuff that, I'm attached to because the writer director, asked me to produce for them, which, affords me to work on several things at once. I think if I was writing 4 short films and directing 4 short films all at once, my head would explode.
Sure.
So like that side of things has kept me busy, in an exciting way, in like a different sort of creative way, like writing schedules and making spreadsheets is creative to me, but that's like a different part of the creative brain. Which has afforded me the personal time to write my first feature script, which is what I've been working on throughout the pandemic.
Absolutely. And how did you get, like, it was this a story that was sort of knocking on your brain for a long time, and then it was finally like, hey, you have 2 hours. Why don't you write it down?
Oh, like 6 months. But yes.
<it's laughs> No, not like 2 hours a day. Because I'm sure you're very busy. And then you're like, let me set aside some time to do writing.
Yeah, it's a story about, I had like told people about this summer that I worked at the bowling alley in San Marcos, Texas, during high school. And just like the kind of like kooky people who would come in. And like, that was like a slice of like, a year of my life or a couple years of my life that I like hung out with these really specific people that are not my closest friends anymore, but like nothing happened. It's just, you know, a part of a section of my life. And enough people were like, I feel like you could make a movie out of that I was like, you know what? This would be a really fun script to write. Again, like, I was like, I'm not a writer. I'm just forever saying I'm not a writer. I've never written a feature film before. I have no idea what like the structure of that is like. This is really scary. I don't necessarily want to write this, but like it's my story. So I'm the only person who can write it. And it took me like, I don't know, less than a year maybe, but like maybe a year to write the first draft. Well, there was like a couple of years there where I was like, sure, I'll write it someday. And then like finally started writing it. And then once I got the first draft out, I was like, oh, I like writing this and I like creating this story. And like more drafts, getting into more and more drafts was it didn't take a year each time. But yeah, it is, to answer a question, a personal story, because it's based on the summer I worked at a bowling alley, and it's set in 2004. So it's very nostalgia-y and really weird to call it a period piece, but it is. I saw a tweet or something that was like, when I think it was referencing Freaks and Geeks, like, yeah, when Freaks and Geeks was made, like the time period between when Freaks and Geeks came out and when it was set, if that was today,
it'd be the same.
It would be early 2000s. So I was like, okay, so that's me right now. I guess it isn't, speaking of too soon, I guess it isn't too soon to be telling these like early 2000s stories and call it period. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, my long-winded TLDR. Yes, it's a personal story.
No, I like it. And I think that as an inspiration to other writers who might be listening, the idea that just a story that maybe you regularly tell to your friends that like comes up, you know, what's that one story that you tell every party, you know?
Right.
I got a handful of those where I'm like, okay, I don't really know too many people at this party, so I got three stories. I will hit them with those during the course of the night. They'll think I'm charming. It'll be great. Right. But the beauty is, hey, those stories could be whole movies. They've entertained parties for years. Right. And everybody who hears these stories of these characters that you worked with, I mean, I love the idea of a good summer job or like a, you know, when you're young and you're working with unusual people and you like don't realize that, I guess, everyone's super unusual. It's like, what's up with these kooks? Like, that's the best part. I love that. That's
what was your high school summer job or your high school job?
Well, to be honest, the basic stories that I usually tell are about summer stock that I did. Cause when I first realized that I could do summer stock, cause like when I was growing up, nobody was like, hey, you know what? You can, during the summers, you know, you can go to festivals and work there as an intern. So I didn't know until I got to college. And then as soon as I found out, every summer at college, I would just go work summer stock. So I went and worked at Williamstown Theater Festival. And that was my summers for college. Yes. Williamstown Theater Festival, for anyone who's not involved with theater, is essentially like highbrow plays with famous people. So it's I would say that 80%, and this is a high percentage, it's probably lower, but I'm going to say 80% of even just the interns and the actors are like famous people now, or like they're, oh, he's the editor of this new television show, or oh, they do this. So I spent all this time at the time with just these people making theater and having a fun time. And I had finally realized that I could make theater and it was real. And then years later, they're like, hey, don't you know, wasn't he in that play you worked on? I'm like, oh my God, he's the lead in a series now? What is going on? Like, you know, like people, you know, or even famous people. And I met them at the time and they were famous and I was like really nervous about it. And then you hear them in interviews now, you know, on podcasts talking about that time. And they're like, oh, I was so young. I like didn't even know what I was doing at Williamstown. And I'm like, you didn't know what you were doing?
You absolutely did.
You were my hero. Like, so that's my thing. I'm like such a diehard like theater nerd that like most of that, I was like, I have other side stories about weird times when I lived in New York City and I lived near gangs and they were like, hey, we'll take care of you. But that's neither here nor there. That's just about wacky.
Just leave that at that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you that one later. but like, you know, the things that you, the idea here is that any story that you've lived through, you can write, like you can create a movie, you can create stories. Now, some people have ideas in their head based on stories that they've lived, right? But then there's others who are like, you know what? There's just a story. There's various characters in my head. I hear people talk about, I don't know that this is me exactly. I hear writers talking about how they hear the voices of their characters. I don't hear the voices of my characters necessarily, but I definitely have like 4 or 5 stories that constantly nag me to write them. Like,
yeah, I don't hear characters. I don't, characters not first for me, premises first, which really sucks because stories aren't about premises, they're about characters. And so then I have to really force myself to write character.
Yeah.
That's.
I think one of the reasons I have like constantly said, like, I'm not a writer, I just write, is because I only write things that like I, so far anyway, that are like personal stories that are, I feel are like begging to be told from my brain and my experience. And like, I consider like screenwriters to be people who can like take a premise or some sort of like idea that isn't necessarily about them and like be and create an entire world that like isn't real. Which I think is like the difference between us as writers. Like, you've definitely written personal stories. Like, there are parts of A Room Full of Nothing that are straight from your life, but like, you are very much a, I'm writing four pilots right now because they're all different premises and just different ideas that have just popped into my brain. Whereas I'm like, I will work on one story for 4 years because it's the only thing I have in my brain.
I'm looking at, I've got a folder in Google Drive that's the scripts folder. And inside that I've got 18 scripts. one of them is A Room Full of Nothing, so that doesn't count because it's already been made. So 17 other ideas that's just like, I see some like major potential in this idea, so let me just start writing out a synopsis.
Yeah.
So I've got like 17 different synopses. Some of them are like, I've started writing and I'm like 10 pages in, 15 pages in. Others are just like, you know, a log line.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that something that is really hard for all of us who are creative is not comparing ourselves to other people, right? But it must be really hard for you guys because you're with each other all the time. And you have, as has been established, very different ways that you approach, you know, creation. Nothing wrong with either way, right? Each way is beautiful in its own way. And each way has created amazing content at the and the end product, no matter what, right? But I mean, we're all in our head about our own process, like, oh, if I only did it like this guy, then I'd be better, right? Like, yeah. Whatever, you know, if every novelist compared themselves to Stephen King, they'd quit, right? They're yeah. Like, I haven't written 112 stories before I turn 28. That's like, bros, you know. That's just what he does. Like, that's just the way he works. Don't try to be the person that you're not, right? Perhaps the beauty of your personal stories, Elena, is that it really immediately, like Duncan was talking about, you connect with the characters. You connect with the characters super intensely right away. But, and to be honest, I've done both, right? Right now I'm working on a story that started out as a screenplay. I wrote a whole first draft, and then I was like, no, this is a novel. And I just threw the screenplay away and took the characters in a different direction, but took a class with a novelist to help me reformat it and whatever that was, right? I didn't know that was what that was,
so
those characters.
Interesting. Like, I can't, like, it kind of broke my brain just now that you were like, it was like fully written as a screenplay, and then I scrapped it and wrote the same thing as a novel. Like, I'm so
that's
like,
that's because you're the one, you want validation for the work that you've done. So to do an entire yes. screenplay and then be like, it's never going to get made. Nobody's ever going to read it. It's never going to win an award. It's like, why did I do all of this work?
Yes, yeah. But yes, that is true. I'm very like validation seeking. I want a gold star for everything I do. That is not a lie.
But it is hard, like, to create something and then let it go. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm also like, if I'm making something, I personally, the way that my brain works is like, I'm specifically making this thing. Like, I don't even know, like, even though it's a personal story, like, I don't even know how I would make Sunset Lanes a novel, even though like I totally could. But like, I'm just like, no, that's a screenplay.
Right.
That's where we'll live.
You know, what's interesting too, is that my writing teacher is always like, will give me notes on my novel drafts, right? I'm writing chapters and I send them and they're like, yeah, this reads like a screenplay. You need more description. So that's literally the difference, is it's like you just describe more things.
Noted.
Like that's the only difference. Because like, I still write dialogue heavy stuff. Like, it's still just like talk, 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 talk. And she's like, cool, where are they when they're having this conversation? And I was like, oh yeah, I should mention that. Yeah, you should. You should mention where they are, what day it is, when was the last time they talked to each other. Write these things down, right? And I was like, oh, okay. So it's really not, it's like, I was like, for me, I am totally like that too. I'm like, screenplay first. It's always about hearing people talk, conversation, scene to scene. Like even in, so I write dialogue first. All of my current things are just like talk, 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 talk. And then I go back in for a draft of like, okay, let's tell what this is what she looks like. Okay. All right. Yeah, what's, cause I wrote a big long draft and then they were like, you mentioned that she had black hair 6 pages in. I had already imagined her as a blonde. What can you need to tell me right away? And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Right. Yeah. Right away. I'll tell you. Black hair. Okay.
It's so funny. I think of it the opposite way too, though. Like there's this short story that I wrote in high school when like, I don't know, maybe it's the gold star thing in my life. Like I got a lot of praise for it from like my teacher and my peers and stuff. And so it like made me want to have a creative writing minor in college, which I never did anything with and then dropped. But it was this story about a girl getting her period for the first time and then going to an NSYNC concert that day. Cause that happened to me.
Sure.
And like, it's one of my favorite stories I've ever written. And I've heard like, other people say, or maybe I've said it to myself, like that would be a really fun short film. But it's like it has broken my brain to even think about how I would make that a film because to me it's a short story.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like once a story finds itself in a form that feels comfortable, like we're like I'm joking about how I'm going to tell you the story about me and my rough neighborhood in the after, but. That's an onstage story for me. That's I've got a crowd of people who are giving me attention at a party. I'm now going to tell this story, right? It's also, I have an embarrassing moment story that I like to tell in classes when I feel like everybody is feeling embarrassed about acting because acting is embarrassing, right? So I love telling that one just to get them be like, listen to this crazy thing that happened to me, right? Am I going to turn this moment into a short film? Probably not, but just because it's already found its form, right? It needs to be in this spot. And for you, the short story was important to have in that moment. First of all, revealing personal details about yourself, especially in such a vulnerable moment, that's a creative, if nothing else, right?
No
that's
thanks.
That's so creative that, people who don't do that, like regular, yeah. like... Mm-hmm. The people in the world that don't consider themselves creative, that aren't creative, they don't tell you about when they got their period, right? They're not going to tell you that story. But it's great because you open the door to people who are like, oh my God, I also had a crazy time. Absolutely. I also went to that concert. That's so crazy or whatever, right? That's the beauty of that. And the other thing is, we're writing, we can write any way that we want. And to go back to this idea that I wrote a thing and then changed it, every story can become whatever we want it to be, right? Yeah. Even like, and I'm interested to hear from you, Duncan, about like, for you, what's the way that your brain processes from the premise to the story? Like you talked about how you're like, man, I wish I could connect with characters, but my ideas just come from premises. I mean, I've taught writing classes for years and some people's brains start with premise and I'm down for that. I'm into it. But for me, premise is like a large umbrella under which thousands of stories could be. So how do you pick of the thousands of possibilities from a premise? How do you pick that one through line to turn into a story?
Well, let's talk about adult diagnosed ADD. Not really, but it's tough. It's really hard, but I think, I just have to keep reminding myself to commit to the premise and then let that guide the story. Like with A Room Full of Nothing, I think I wrote like 10 endings and then landed on one because it was like, no, you know what? I was going to write a story about people who the world slowly disappears around them. And I'm never going to pull the rug out from under that idea. And I'm just going to keep taking these characters. What happens if you do start stripping away their world? That's the premise. And then that will inform what the characters do and what the characters say. So I think it's just, it's using that premise as a, well, let's get back to the basics of this story. Mm. What is it about? It's about two people who are having a miserable time and their world is fracturing around them. All right, right. Let's take that to the next scene. Take that to the next scene. Take that to the next scene.
Interesting. I like that. I like the idea of it as like a central theme that like anytime you're like, wait, what's this scene about? Okay, wait, central theme. Great. Well,
yeah, because I think for me, I'm like, man, I got a really fucking good idea for a television show. It's about this. It's about this guy who does this. And then I'll be writing, and I'm like, well, what happens next? Well, what's it about? It's about a guy who does this. Bam, there's my next scene.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely.
How do you pick like what's going to happen in something that's like so fantastical? Like you write much more like sci-fi fantastical stories than I do. Like, for example, Duncan's writing a pilot right now called Big Boy. And I'll let you talk about what it's about. But like in something like Big Boy, how do you pick like, well, this is the one little slice of this imaginary world that I've come up with that I'm going to focus on.
I think in a
talk about Big Boy first.
So Big Boy, it's a pilot I'm writing about, you know, I grew up playing beat 'em up games like Street Fighter, Double Dragon, things like that. And those stories are all about the heroes beating up the bad guys. an idea came to me one day. I was like, well, who is that first bad guy? Who's the first mini boss? What's his story? Where does he come from? Once you beat him, where does he go? But also, how did he get to that CD warehouse that day? And I was like, bam, there's my character, Big Boy. Who is this guy? And what made him the lowest level, the criminal underboss of this horrible multi-conglomerate, whatever drug operation that these two heroes are beating? And I was like, I want to write a story about that guy. What happens when he clocks out at the end of the day? And then, yeah, he is a mini boss, or he is like the sort of supernatural character or sci-fi character or video game character, whatever you want to call him. But at the end of the day, he's got needs and desires and ambitions, just like the rest of us. What got him to this point? Probably something he needed to provide for himself or his family or something. So that's my story. And then, you know, and then I start thinking about structure. And then it's like, okay, well, how do I get into it? What happens next? Where do I go? What's the twist? How do I keep people interested by going down a different lane that they wouldn't expect?
Sounds to me like you have a strong grasp and interest in the format for your stuff. Elena's talked a few times about how, you know, she likes to buck the format. People tell you got to write a story like this. And she's like, I'm going to write it my way, which I love. And the world is open for that kind of thing. But like how, Duncan, did you get into sort of knowing what the structure was? And like, how does your brain process the structure?
I obsess over structure a little bit too much, and I have to constantly remind myself, like, you can write whatever you want to write next.
Same.
And it's almost a crutch going back to structure.
Yeah.
I don't know. But at the same time, like, I know that I got to keep people interested.
Sure.
And a way to do that and a way to, like, help guide myself around what happens next is just to think about the three acts and the beats and all that. Midpoint and rising action and all that shit.
It provides a comfort for you as you're writing the story that like helps you decide, like Elena was asking, like, how do you decide which path it is? Is it the structure that then you go, well, what could happen next? You're like, well, where are we in the structure? Oh, well, we need to do a thing that makes them think something else is happening, so I better write that scene. Like, is that what's leading you down?
I know, like, hey, we're getting into the fun and games. The fuck is the fun and games for this guy? Oh, here it is. Now I got to fit that in.
Yeah.
I described the way that I wrote, speaking of like me doing shit, just like not the way you're supposed to. I described the way that I wrote Sunset Lanes is the name of my feature. I described the way that I wrote the first draft of Sunset Lanes to a writer friend recently. And she was like, holy shit, you're bonkers. Like, because I was like, yeah, so I had this idea and there were like three or four scenes that are like directly from my experience that I just like thought were really fun scenes that I just wanted to write down. So I wrote those scenes and I was like, where do those scenes go in this story? And then I like sort of wrote an outline and then I like tried to write the script chronologically, but got stuck because I got bored in the scenes I had to write. So then I just like wrote like scene headings for those and wrote like something happens in the bowling alley in this scene. Okay, next scene. And then I wrote the scene I wanted to write. And then eventually there was a whole script. And she was like, what the fuck? Like, that's how you wrote a feature film? Like, insane. And like, I was like, yeah, at one point it was like, I couldn't finish the first draft because I didn't know where the story was going because I didn't have any like of my real story left. So I had to like, then after I'd written half of the first draft, wrote a really intense outline scene by scene of exactly what happened in every scene in chronological order after I had already written half of it. And then I like discovered things that are like not from my real life that could happen in this story to like make it more like cinematic and dramatic. Yeah. And like, that's how it came to life, which is just like so opposite of.
No. I don't want you to sell yourself short. Like every time you're talking, I'm like, no, don't sell yourself short, because any way that you get pen to paper, any way that you get words on a page are good. It doesn't matter what order they come in or how they work. If you write 16 outlines, why not? Right? I mean, we're talking about the screenplay that I wrote. The screenplay that I wrote was based on one character in this world. And I decided I didn't want to focus the whole story on this one character and switched which character is the focus and wrote a brand new thing, right? That the what happens in the screenplay will not happen in the world anymore. But I had to write that whole story to inspire the ideas that led to the next one, right? So it was like, oh, wait. If that happened, well, maybe she could, you know, and then that's what led me, especially because I got involved with a writing group that was like, I could just throw ideas at them and be like, well, if a person falls in love with a random person, how could that happen? Is it magic? Is there, if there's a lightning storm, could there be some magic? There's all sorts of, well, my story's now about magic, but like, that's what led me to the whole thing, right? In fact, now it's about Salem witches. It's like a way I went so far. Like if you read the first part and then you get to where I am now, it's like, what? But that's the journey, right? Like, and nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
The short film that I'm producing and assistant directing this weekend is about a witch. So
hooray.
I feel you there.
Absolutely. It's real fun to do drafts during Halloween season, I'll tell you. Yeah. But the rest of the year, you're like, is this fine? Should I be writing this?
My writer like wrote this script kind of for fun, and like now I think would say she hasn't like said this out loud, so I'm just assuming, but she has kind of been like, I don't know, I just like was a fun idea and whatever. And then like as we got closer to production, she was like, suddenly I need like witch consultants, and like five different people in her life like popped up and was like, oh I'm a witch, like I'm legitimately, I practice Wicca, or I'm a Wiccan, or however you say it. And like, she's like, I didn't know I know so many witches, but now I know so many witches, and like my script is so much more fun and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like interesting how like all of a sudden, like October 1st rolled around and it was like, all right, all the witches are here. We're going to get to the final draft and we're going to shoot this thing on the 15th.
Now that we've got the coven together, we're ready. Let's bless this script and we're ready to go. Yes. Well, hey, I mean, that like the idea of your friend and the story they wrote, like sometimes you don't even know that there's a detail you need to research until you get to a certain point. So no story is a bad story to write. Everything that you are inspired to do, you should try to do, right? Even to harken back to the thing we were talking about earlier, where it was like Zoom movies are not what we're looking for right now. But maybe the Zoom movie that you make and show to 12 people inspires them to do something else. Or you look at this and you are able to figure out, okay, once I can be in person with these people, how can I flesh out the story that we've clearly have a good base for, right?
Totally.
No creation is a bad creation. I mean, think about the whole plays that are created from an improv scene. Like, yeah, you're never going to see that improv scene again, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't also worth it in that moment. It wasn't important to do.
I really like writing sketch from improv. Like, that's one of my favorite things that I ever did at the institution, because, yeah, the improv was sort of transient or whatever you want to call it, but the sketches that came out of that stuff was some of the most brilliant things that I'd ever done.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, you do have something tangible, but that improv work is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And people don't give themselves the credit to realize that a lot of this stuff is just ideas ruminating in your brain. Like, you just sort of need to, it's almost like a marinade, right? Like, that chicken's not going to be good if you don't leave that in the marinade for 3 days. Like, right. You got to do it. So if you are not going to, you watch that scene, it was great, but you need 3 weeks to kind of keep discussing that improv scene before you finally are like, oh, but you know what the funniest part was? When he picked up the banana and used it as a phone. Yes, yeah. That is the key, right? You know, whatever that might be, and
have you
create
been reading
from
my
there.
Scripts?
Banana phone coming now on Peacock. Yeah,
that's the 19th folder in Duncan's Google folder now.
Just banana phone. You joke, but you'll talk to me in 6 months and you'll have a banana phone script and you'll be like, I was thinking about it for like 3 days. But this is the beauty, right? The beauty is that we are creatives. I'm so glad that you guys are in a good, like, job place where you can work and create content for a fun company, make money, like, use the skills that you have been working on your whole lives to actually make money with, and be able to give yourself a little bit of breathing room to be like, oh, maybe I can put my fingers on this keyboard and write something without it being all like, dear sir, we will not be able to pay you this month because, you know what I mean? Like, if I have to have another conversation where I'm like, cool, could I pay you later though? Like, that's not, you know, I'd rather not have those discussions, but being in my writer's group where I'm all like, yeah, maybe she is from a long line of Salem witches and maybe it's like all connected. Like, I wouldn't even like figure out my own ideas if not for wacky ideas thrown around, new random stuff, like being inspired by this or that, or even another person in my writing group who like thinks differently than I do, who creates differently than I do, reads what I put out there and goes, you know, I think that it should come together like that. And my lone brain would never have thought of it that way. That's the beauty. Yes. And the great part about you guys being together too, because you're different and you're creative, but you can bounce ideas off of each other and turn it into something like that you never would have imagined.
You definitely have to give yourself permission to not take some ideas though.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Some of the stuff that's bouncing around, it's like, oh, you absolutely don't get
you don't
this
get
story.
It. But sure. They're also on that note, I like thought I was done with Sunset Lanes. I was like, maybe like one more polished draft before we shoot. But like, I think this is exactly the story. And then I did a Zoom read through like 3 weeks ago with just some actor friends, just so I could hear it out loud, because I thought that polished draft would be like changing some phrasing so it sounds more like a human would say it and not like someone on their keyboard. But like, then we had like a 30-minute discussion afterwards and I got so many ideas from the people who like just read the script out loud, and they were people who had read previous drafts before, but like there were so many like ideas and questions and like specifically like small ideas to enhance like central themes and stuff like that I was like, oh, got it. I thought I was done, but like I was the only one looking at it for so long.
Yeah.
That like I thought I was done. And now I'm like, I know exactly where to take this next probably pretty hefty draft.
Yeah. Well, but that's the beauty too, is that like using different ways to like get feedback. I love a good read through. Oh man, give me a read through. Oh, I love it. My favorite thing to do is to get people together for a read through. It changes everything. And you like hear the words out loud. And I love what you said where you're like, let's make it sound like a human would say it. Totally. I'll write these phrases and I was like, oh yeah, no, nobody's saying this. That's not a thing anyone would say.
It's so funny too, because I'm like,
unless they're Aristotle.
Right. I'm like, I arranged this Zoom read through because I was like, this is like basically the shooting draft. I'm going to cut it into a podcast and then I'm going to like send it to investors and be like, if you don't want to read it, you could listen to it. And now I'm like, well, I'm still going to do that. But then I'm going to be like, this podcast version is significantly different than what we're going to make.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to a draft in the midst of the artistic development.
Exactly.
I was marketed different. I was just so inspired by these beautiful actors. That's the best part. I love it. So one more question I wanted to ask to Duncan about. So we're talking about writing, we're talking about creating these scripts, but in the paperwork that you sent me about like what you guys are working on, again, a thick, heavy list of amazing projects. And I was like, wow, I can't even Google them all. It mentions that, Duncan, you are also working on doing some acting work and trying to get involved in other things, not that you're making, but, you know, getting into the LA world. And that, especially in the new version of it, gotta be unusual. Like, how do you break into a world you can't just knock on the door of? Like,
no, you can't.
Yeah. So like what's happening for you in that part of your career?
My degree's in acting. You know, I got that undergrad, and I started acting when I was 13, doing, instead of going on summer vacation, our high school drama teacher, he would put on 6 weeks of two full length Shakespeare productions every summer for the high school and junior high kids. So my entire summer vacations growing up was doing Shakespeare. I think I've done like 18 Shakespeare shows in my life.
Wow.
So acting is absolutely my first passion, my oldest passion. So when we got out to LA, I got out here on a production side of it, but about October, November 2020, I started taking Zoom Meisner classes, which was, you would think that it would be terrible, but it was actually very, very, very fulfilling, because when you're on a Zoom call, you can't hide anything. Your eyes are like right there in the camera. There's no faking it. And so started taking Meisner classes. I've been going through that and just getting my feet wet, trying to make connections and working on my craft still. There's always something to learn, I think.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for 20 years, and I'm still learning so much about myself and my vulnerability. And I'm kind of just focusing on the craft right now, starting to put together materials to send out to reps and stuff like that, but not really taking that as seriously as just like really honing in on who I am as an actor in this scene.
Mm. So. Yeah, there's also a lot of really great sort of acting workshops in LA, and like a lot of the nice thing, like we were talking about before we started recording, the like, you know, cutting the wheat from the chaff as far as like who's putting out theatrical stuff at this point. That same with the teachers, like you are getting the teachers that have maintained, the teachers that were able to adapt. How are they able to turn it into an online class and maybe a way to do it in person? Like they had to adapt it and figure out. And if they're still rocking and rolling and teaching classes, it's because they love it so deeply. And those people are going to be the ones that make you such a better actor, because they care with their whole heart to work with actors. They want to do it so much that they like broke through in a world where there wasn't theater for 2 years, and they were like, I'm doing it. I'm preparing these actors, because someday the door is going to open and they're going to be like, let in the casting call. And I want all of my great people to be the ones that get into the next shows because they worked hard, because they cared about creating something. Also, you mentioned that you're trying to adjust to who you are. I think that when we get older, we do. We've learned more about the world. We've learned more about how to process and how, like, as creatives, we're always empathetic, you know, because we're looking at people. Oh, how do they live their lives? Why are they making these decisions? But the older you get, the more varied your own life has been, the more, you know, complicated decisions you have had to make. And that in and of itself makes you a better actor, I think, because you now know the different, like, varying levels of gray that create interesting characters.
Yeah, I think it does take like 20 years to become a decent actor. You know, the people winning Oscars, there are exceptions to the rule, like Jennifer Lawrence, who won it at like 20 or 19 or however old she was. But you look at the people that are winning Oscars, these are people in their 40s. You know, these are people who have been through the ringer, who've learned some shit, have that life experience. I think if I have any advice to offer anyone, it's go out and get your heart broken. You know, fuck up, make mistakes, because that's how you're gonna grow and become a more colorful, well-rounded, deeper person.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be an actor and only an actor. Don't be the person that's like, I'm an actor. All I do is act. I love acting. Let me act. It's like, no, go to a party, dude. Meet people, talk to people, get fucked up. Don't die, but get those stories. Learn shit. And yeah. You only learn by doing.
So. Yeah, meet people that you would never have thought about meeting. Like, have an unusual life experience where you're like, I should not be here, but I need to meet this guy who tells me some weird story. And then I'm like, oh, I never knew your point of view existed. And now I do. You go into the next audition and you're like, it's the guy at 7-Eleven. I'm doing it, right? I mean, until you, and the other part about being an actor, and like I said, the empathetic nature of being a creative, when you write, when you act, when you are creating, you really are interested in the breadth of human experience. So get out there, see what's happening. If you've spent all of your life in one place, go to another place. If you only hang out with people that do a certain thing, meet people that do other things. Is everyone you know millionaire? Cool. Meet somebody who works at McDonald's. We're all cool and we have different stories. Like, and it helps you to, you know, understand different characters and understand what they're going through. Even the story you're talking about the villain, like this villain, hey man, he's a villain right now, but you know, when he's at home, he's just a dad, right. You know, and there's people out there, you know, especially in our world right now, the billionaires who are being painted as terrible devils, but they still are like, hey man, I'm still trying to work on my marriage. Maybe it'll work out. I don't know. You know, like they're still humans who are like figuring out their lives. So I think that that's really cool that you're working on your craft and that, you know, you're trying to soak up the life experience to become a better actor in that way.
It was a really nice time during the pandemic just to sort of like do a little taste test of everything. Cause I did the Strasberg Institute was doing like an online thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was doing online classes, so you could be in New York taking the Strasberg Institute in LA's class for a bit. So I taste tested all of them, and then I found this one teacher that I really liked who was sort of no bullshit and called you out on your stuff and pushed you. You know, you got to find those people that really push you and get you out of your comfort zone and force you to grow and think about it.
Yeah.
Just be critical.
That's another great point too, is the idea that sort of like you can check out all the acting teachers everywhere and find the one, because there's so much on Zoom now. You could have a teacher in London that you're working with on Shakespeare, right? It's really just about finding the person who pulls from you what you need to be pulled, right? Like I had, like even to harken back to the story I keep talking about, I wrote that screenplay by myself. I would have done nothing with it. I would have tried to rewrite it and it really wasn't the right thing. But once I got this writing teacher who like really helped pick my brain and helped discuss it with me, that's when I finally was like, oh, I could do this in a different way, right? You need someone to like open your mind, to like let you know this is just a door. Open it. Yeah. You know, it's not a wall. It's just another passageway that you didn't know was there, but you can take it.
Comfort is a huge thing too. If it's comfortable, then you're doing it wrong. I think that pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, get embarrassed, be nervous, be weary about what you're doing. Because if you're complacent and you're just doing the thing that feels right, then I don't think you're ever going to grow. You're never going to get anywhere.
I love that because I feel like that's the most, like everyone's always like, do what makes you happy. And you're like, make yourself very upset. Then you'll be a better artist. I'm pro that, exactly what you're saying. But I love the idea that like a lot of people are like, hey man, like just do what like makes you feel like whole. And you're like, if a person makes you feel uncomfortable, hang out with that person. You're like, yeah.
This is advice. I follow a number of YouTube channels. I go down YouTube like dark holes all the time. but one of them I follow is a guy called 74 Gear, and he's a 747 pilot, and he just does videos about flying 747 planes. And one piece of advice that he gives everybody is, as a pilot, if what you're doing, if it starts going south, right, planes going down, and everything you're doing isn't fixing it, do something else. Like, if what you're doing isn't working, simple solution, do something else. That's the only way you're going to correct the plane. And so I feel like that's great advice for creativity too.
Yeah.
If what you're doing right now isn't doing it for you, isn't you know, leveling you up, isn't pushing you in another direction, isn't opening doors, do something else.
Man.
Maybe that's why you have 17 scripts and none of them are finished.
Probably.
Hey, man, we're all inspired in 1,000 ways. I don't want to show you my list of ideas that are started and not finished, for sure. Also, like, I love that you're like, this airline pilot knows what's up. And I also love that this guy's like, how do I make my life more exciting? Well, I do a death-defying job every day, but let's try to make a YouTube channel about life advice. Love that guy, whatever it is. Big fan of pilots myself. Awesome. So cool. One last question for the both of you. You are so creative. You're doing such good work out there, and you're really working on new projects and learning new things. But what is it that you're doing to fill your own creative cup? Like, what makes you inspired? What are you listening to music? Are you like knitting? What is it that like gives you the time to kind of think about your ideas, to, you know, inspire you to do new things? What is your creative inspirations?
Mine is do the opposite. This sounds so silly, but it works for me. I watch a lot of reality television.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I need to turn my brain off from like thinking about shit too much. So when I'm feeling kind of like tapped out and like can't work on my shit, I'm like, all right, Real Housewives marathon, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I listen to music. I get my inspo from music. That's it. I'll go on. I like to listen. Elena is notoriously has music taste that's about 20 years old. I don't think she's listened to a new artist other than Taylor Swift in the past 15 years.
Sure, that's true.
And I'm the same way. I'll go listen to like all the music I listened to in high school and college, and then that'll just take me right back to those moments of like either the darkest days of my life or the happiest days of my life. And it's like, that's what gets the gears spinning. And I'm like, oh shit, oh yeah, that was like a real deep emotional time. That's perfect for a story.
Sometimes I wonder if we process music differently than we used to, because when I was a kid, I would get an album and then I would just listen to that album like over and over and over and over and over. And so then now when I listen to that album, it like totally brings me back. Yeah. But now I'll hear a song here, I'll hear a song there. I'm rarely listening to like a full album unless the artist themselves has like gone on record to say like, guys, I wrote this full concept album and you really have to listen to the whole thing. Then I'm like, oh, okay, let's listen to the whole thing. But usually it's like, oh, what's the pop song here? What's the pop song there? And while I, like you guys, often listen to older music because it's sort of my comfort zone, I have I always listen to this Spotify playlist that's about brand new releases, because I want to be, because it's not on the radio as much as it used to be, you know. I recently got super into this like playlist that was like hits of 1983. And I know this is aging myself, but I was 5 in 1983. So it's not like these are like, oh yeah, I remember when this song came out. Like, no, absolutely not. But the songs were so relevant to the radio.
You weren't listening to The Cure when you were 5?
Right. I wasn't like deeply into it. I don't think I understood The Cure until I was like 28. So I remember my high school friends were like, this is really deep. And I was like, too dark for me. I was like, you know, what are the new kids? They got a new album? So because of that, because I don't have the radio, there isn't like some new thing that's showing me what the new albums are. I just try to listen to something new. It's like, what just came out this week? And I listen to it and I'm like, huh, Never would have heard that song in a million years. But yeah. Here I am listening to it. You know, like, what was it? What did I just listen to? Oh, apparently Eminem has released some new songs. And I was like, oh, Eminem, good for you, buddy. And I like turn it on and I listen to it. And I was like, oh, bud, you're doing great. Sounds good. I hope it sells a lot of money, you know.
I love pop music. I love new releases. I'm all over that. My musical tastes are all over the place. If you look at our record collection, I've got like Van Morrison and I've got like Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, but Taylor Swift is like a phenom. She's like, and I mean this in the kindest way to both her and Michael Jackson, but she's like the Michael Jackson of our time, where she makes so much. She inspires everybody. She covers the breadth of all generations. Like, there's like 80-year-olds rocking out to her and there's 10-year-olds rocking out to her. You know what I mean? Like, there's something about the connection to everyone. There's not everybody has that finger on the zeitgeist like she does and like a few other like musicians really do. So, you know, not a surprise that she would feature heavily in the playlist.
She also is still one of those artists who puts out an album and the entire album is an experience, because she makes music in eras. Like Swifties are like, this is the Lover era, this is the Folklore era, this is the Evermore era, and like, it's still like that. And now we're just going back in time because she's remaking all of her records.
Hey man, chick wants to get some cash and they took it from her, so she will take it back. She's also taught us a lot about good business practices, which I think is excellent as well.
I love it.
Like we were talking about how Scarlett had to do the legal process so we could all benefit from that. Taylor stood up for all of us and was like, hey, maybe musicians should make a couple bucks when they are literally the entirety of what you're interested in listening to and experiencing. So I love this. I love that you guys are not only creating like amazing stuff on your own, but you're being inspired by all the other amazing creators on this earth, like learning from them and becoming better. I can't wait until, Elena, you're on number 3 and we've got you and we're like, what happened in the last 10 years?
Right.
I'll probably have to wait a little bit longer. You know, well, that's okay. Once you get your Oscar, then I'll get you on again.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. But real pleasure to talk to both you guys about your experiences and your journeys. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Of course.
Yeah, it was great. Pleasure. So fun.
Awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.